Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Success Circle Business Accelerator call. This is Lisa Minnini with Accelerate Associates. And if this is your first call, welcome, welcome, welcome. These calls happen every Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It is recorded, and we are recording now. And we also have, within about 24 hours, you can log on to the Success Circle portal to get a copy of the recording in the video, I'm sorry, the audio library under the High Content Business Accelerator call. This particular call is going to be under the Systematize and Monetize section of that portal under audio library. For those of you, if this is your first call, remember to mark your calendars for the second Tuesday of each month to get on this call live. If you have any questions about the topic, feel free to email us ahead of time at info@accelerateassociates.com if you want something very specific to the topic covered. So thank you so much for being here. And just a quick reminder, we have a Profitability Lab introduction happening in December. Actually, it's going to happen the usually we have it in the Thursday in December, the 12th. And this the 10th, rather, and in December it's going to happen the 9th. So I wanted to let everyone know of that change, the Profitability Lab introduction. That is, anyone who's interested in finding out more about the Profitability Lab, it's going to be held on Wednesday, December 9th, not December 10th. So I just want to make sure that everybody is aware of that change. And let's get started, because we have a very interesting topic today. Today is all about understanding the financial health of your business. So important to understand what that is. And specifically today, we're going to look at reading and understanding your balance sheet. Now, if you haven't gone into the audio library yet, you can pick up your copy of a sample business or balance sheet, rather. It is in the audio library right now that you can download. Again, it's under the Business Accelerator call and under the subtitle Systematize and Monetize. So you can download that right now and follow along. And my very special guest, in addition to telling us about the balance sheet, is she's also going to look at the difference between an accrual basis and a cash basis and why it matters to your business, and also changes you can make to improve your connection to your company's books. My very special guest is Christine Singh. She's a CPA, MBA, and all the other letters that follow her name. Chris is principal in the Ann Arbor office of Raymond, and she leads the accounting, tax, and consulting practice, and she leads the emerging companies niche for the firm. Chris joined Raymond in January of 2011 in connection with the firm's business combination with Wright Griffin Davis and Company, and she has over 20 years of experience in public accounting at the local and national firms, as well as experience in private industry. She has always preferred people to numbers, and she works closely with her business clients and owners to help them take their business to the next level of performance and profitability. She especially enjoys helping steer emerging companies through their early stages of growth. She also holds a Bachelor of Arts in Economics and a Master's in Business Administration from the University of Michigan, where she also played varsity volleyball. She belongs to a number of professional and community organizations, like the Regional Chambers of Commerce and the Women Presidents Organization Southeast Michigan Chapter, as well as the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Michigan Association of Certified Public Accountants. And of special note, she was just selected to the board of directors for her company. What's interesting about that is she's the only woman on the board of directors for that company, which I'm sure will be changing soon now that you're a member, Chris. So welcome to the Business Accelerator call.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you. So let's dive deep into the importance of understanding a balance sheet. Now, out of all the financial statements that one could look at, Chris. Why did you pick the balance sheet?
I picked the balance sheet because that is the financial health of a company on any given day. It's a daily checkup. And I find in working with small businesses, which I believe are some of similar size businesses, the folks that are on the call and that work with, that you work with, Lisa, that it is the least understood, and in many cases business owners never really look at it, nor do they understand what it means.
So what does a balance sheet tell you?
It tells you on the day of the statement. So if anyone's looking at our sample balance sheet, that date for ABC Company is on September 30th, 2015. So on that day, that tells us how healthy that company is.
Okay. And let's go through it. If you could explain,
sure.
You know, what is, kind of go through it, assets, liabilities, and shareholders,
sure.
Equity, and all that, just give us an overview of it, and then we'll drill down into the different specifics.
Sure. So looking at what we have here in our sample balance sheet, it's structured the way nearly every balance sheet is. It starts with assets on the first top section, and it has liabilities and shareholders' equity on the bottom section. For those on the call that might be helping their kids with pre-algebra, the formula to kind of figure out how the assets, liabilities, and equity work together is that assets will always equal liabilities plus equity. So if you look at the subtotals at the top, total assets are $560,000, and total liabilities and shareholders' equity are $560,000. And if you reverse that and flip the equation over, equity, which is the value of the company, will always equal assets minus liabilities. There's different ways of looking at it, and there's different terms that people throw out there in terms of how they measure their business.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at this too, at least when I look at a balance sheet, first it tells me a few things. It tells me a story. In this situation, it tells me that this sample balance sheet is probably a service company versus a product company.
And how can you tell that?
Because they're the typical big asset account for product companies is inventory. And you usually find that in the current asset section, and there is no inventory here. I also see that because if you look at the property and expenses section, also known as fixed assets, it's relatively small. There's no building there. There aren't really expensive equipment. So it tells me that this is probably a company whose largest asset, if you will, although that won't show up in the balance sheet, are people, so it's a service business. They probably rent their building. They don't need a big building to operate in.
Right.
And so it's not capital intensive, another term that some folks use.
Mm-hmm. Great. So as we look at current assets, cash, so how is cash determined?
So cash is what is in the bank on that given day, on September 30th, plus or minus what we call some reconciling items. So those would be checks that have been written but haven't been cashed, or deposits that have been made or deposits that have been received but haven't been credited in the bank yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it should, but for most purposes, a company that's running their banking activity pretty clean and understand they're not letting checks sit uncleared and they're not letting deposits sit in the drawer and not put in, it should be relatively close to their bank balance. And that is one big tip I would give any of the business owners on the phone, is you really have to understand what the difference is, because that would be a big, big red flag. If you were looking at your balance sheet, and in this case saw $330,000 of cash, and then opened up the bank account, which hopefully your callers have online access to, and saw a significantly different number.
Okay, because that could mean what?
That could mean there are checks or expenditures going out of the bank that are not properly recorded, either for innocent or non-innocent reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It could mean that there are significant expenses that haven't been cashed for some reason. Sometimes employees might hang on to their, for those that still write manual checks, that might not be receiving or cashing their paychecks.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual, but I've seen that happen. And on the deposit side, that would mean that there may be some deposits that have been brought in and for some reason have not been properly deposited in the bank. It could also mean there might be bank errors as well.
Okay, great. And those are some really great tips with regard to that. So what if you do notice some of these big issues? So every business owner then should take a look at their cash on their balance sheet and then take a look at what their balance is in their checking account.
Yeah, I would suggest that every business owner have online access to their bank account. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they may have more than one cash account, and that's okay. They may even be banking with more than one bank for some reason, and that's okay too. But wherever their cash is, they need to have regular online access to it.
Mm-hmm.
If the owners have other folks doing accounting for them, even more importantly that they have access to it regardless of how often they look at it, actually. So it's important that if there are people handling your cash for other business reasons, that those people know that the business owners can and will look to see what activity is going there at any time.
How do you have a rule of thumb on the frequency that somebody should look at their balance sheet?
Oh, at least monthly. If most of the folks on the call use QuickBooks, that QuickBooks is constantly populating. But because not everything comes in on time or is recorded on time, usually the balance sheet is not that reliable until the end of a month after the month has been properly closed. And what I mean by that is all invoices that have been received in that month, someone has taken the time to record them all. Those would be vendor invoices, people you pay, all invoices to your customers. Sometimes some businesses invoice at the end of the month and may not do it until afterwards. You want to make sure all the monthly activity has been recorded. Also, if the business owner or their accountants are doing reconciliations for cash accounts as we have here, or in a lot of companies, credit card balances, you're going to want to make sure those reconciliations have been done. And what I mean by that is you want to have gotten the statement from the bank or the credit card company for that end of the month and compared it to what was on the balance sheet. And if there are differences, and there certainly can be and often are, you just want to make sure you understand why. Usually they are timing differences, like I explained. Checks mm-hmm. have been written, but they haven't found their way to their destination yet, and that person hasn't cashed them, or deposits have been made, and maybe the bank takes a day to clear it, or maybe they haven't been taken to the bank yet.
Is there a red flag, Chris, on, so let's say you have a cash, you're looking at your balance statement and you have the cash line, and then you go into your bank and you notice there's some discrepancy, but is there a particular red flag, or you're looking at a percentage of the difference that it could be?
Yeah, good question. I would say it's whatever is significant for your company. If you know, business owners should know the significant ins and outs coming out of their company. I mean, if they are in the business of producing small amounts of large revenue or large amounts of small revenue, I guess they should know what's kind of out of sequence. So maybe it's 10,000, maybe it's 50, maybe it's 1,000. But they should know for what's significant to their business, they should be able to eyeball things going in and out.
Okay, got it. So now let's talk about so the cash, accounts receivable, and you also listed on this sample prepaid insurance.
Oh, yep. So those are, and that's, you could also, those are prepaid expenses. Other prepaid expenses that I see are prepaid rent, are prepaid health insurance, prepaid trade shows, if that's a part of your business cycle. And those are expenses that you have had to pay for, but you haven't actually used them yet. So for example, prepaid insurance, it's very common, although in my sample it's a small number, but it's very common that businesses have to be 1 month ahead for their health insurance. So here at September 30th, it's likely that ABC Company has paid their October health insurance. So we'll say for this example, it's $480. But that does not apply to that period yet, so it is parked there on the balance sheet as prepaid, and then the next month it will be moved to the profit and loss statement or the income statement and called insurance expense. Same thing if you were ahead in rent, or if you were ahead, or if your trade shows, sometimes you have to put money down on trade shows or booths that won't happen until, you know, months out. Those are just sitting there in a holding pattern. They're assets because you've used them, you've used your money, and they have not yet been used or expensed.
Right. Okay. So, and that's pretty good insurance, only $480.
Yeah. That's the good old days, yeah. It's probably worth going up and talking about accounts receivable, if that's all right.
Yes.
Okay. So accounts receivable represent invoices to your customers that you've sent out but you haven't collected yet. So the other side of accounts receivable is revenue. So one real many important things that owners would want to know about that is they want to know what makes up that number. And often in QuickBooks and other small accounting packages, it's called an aging, your aged accounts receivable. Ideally, you want them to be not very old. You would like them to be 30 days or less, meaning that your customers are paying you a month or less after that you've issued it to them. So business owners would want to look at, as this gets more aged, if you have invoices in the 60 or 90 or even older category, they would want to take particular notice of that to see if that's an indication that you may have a problem collecting that. Because in most cases, if you have invoiced your customer, you have spent real money in your operations producing that service or product for your customers. And if you're not going to get paid for it, that's a problem, and that's something you should be able to, you should know.
Mm-hmm. Do you recommend that if companies, if somebody doesn't pay within a certain period of time, to either offer them a discount if they pay within 30 days, and then or assess a fee? Do you recommend that?
I do. I mean, that would have to make sense for the cycle of your business. But typically, I see the first 30 days are free, kind of like the credit card company. Mm-hmm. We'll let you float out there for 30 days. And after that, well, then we've kind of become your bank. Mm-hmm. For example, we're an accounting firm, and we do charge a finance charge after 30 days. And we put that clearly on the invoice. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, we have perform that work during that month, and at the end of the month we have invoice, so we feel like we've incurred our payroll and other expenses, and that 30 days later it's a fair amount of time to be reimbursed, if you will, for the costs that we've incurred.
Right, okay. Got that. Anything else about current assets that you want to say?
Maybe just a general comment is that current assets by definition are those that should be liquidated within the year. Often less than that. So cash is already in a liquid position, but accounts receivable and prepaid insurance and anything else that would be in that current category are things that you should be able to liquidate into cash in less than a year. That's the definition of current assets.
I love it. Thank you very much. Okay, that's great. So now let's talk about the non-current assets.
Sure. In this example, this is property and equipment and some other assets, which are deposits. I also see investments. Sometimes companies invest in other companies. So these are long-term assets. These are spending that the company has done with the intention of getting many years of value from them. And so by the definition of non-current are things that will be liquidated or turned over in more than a year. So a classic here are fixed assets. In this situation, in this sample, as I mentioned, there is no real estate. There's no building here. So this ABC is likely leasing. But they still have purchased computers and office equipment to run the business. They have furniture and fixtures. They have leasehold improvements. And if that's another indication you can tell the company is leasing. Mm-hmm. If they purchased their building and they had to put more cost into it, carpeting, roof, for example, it would be called building improvements. And then vehicles. And so those are long-term assets of the company. Mm-hmm. There's a total there, and then there's something called accumulated depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And each company has a depreciation policy, or should. They should be very consistent about that in terms of what the expected life is of each of these assets by their nature. Many businesses use tax lives, which are set by the IRS, regardless of how it works for their company. Those are a good starting point, and I'll give you what those are. But I would say the most important part is for your balance sheet to reflect the value that your property and equipment give your business. So in this situation, the total costs are about $154,000, and the accumulated depreciation is about $62,000. That's 40%, or two-fifths. That means roughly 60% of the original cost of that fixed asset is still there providing great value for your company. To me, that means that that's fairly new stuff. Now, there are some businesses that will have fairly old fixed assets, and their net property equipment will be closer to zero, which from one standpoint is good because it means that they've got their money's worth, but from the other standpoint might be a red flag that there is going to be spending ahead, and often significant spending needed ahead.
Oh, and because their equipment might need
is
to
old.
Be replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah, is old.
Yeah. If they've really been using good depreciation lives and methods that represent the value. So, for example, computers and office equipment, I usually see that those depreciate between 3 and 5 years. So that's what that would be, you know, computer equipment sitting on desks, as well as copier equipment, maybe phone systems.
Mm-hmm.
So by design, then, that might mean that your business should be ready to invest in replacing those in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that.
You understand, yes.
Just went through a new purchase.
Yeah, and it's painful, and sometimes it needs to be financed, which we can talk about below, too.
Especially when you think your computer is going to last 5 years and it lasted 3 years.
Yeah, and I would say 3 years, unfortunately, is more what we see. Our firm, for example, we have a three-year rotation, and we are militant about that, and we are replacing our laptops and donating them away because their effective and efficient and productive use is just vital to our business.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And you can't have any downtime with what you do.
Right.
Yeah, especially during January and February.
Right, January through April. That's right. We need power and we need well-working computers. Yes.
That's right. Go ahead.
The furniture, just moving down some of the lives I usually see. Furniture and fixtures, those are usually 7 to 10 lives. Hopefully you're getting some good time out of if you buy good quality desks and conference room equipment, for example. Leasehold improvements, this is an often misdepreciated item, I will say. Leasehold improvement should be depreciated over the life of the lease. So if you have to remodel your space after you lease it, so this means you have to go out of pocket, the landlord doesn't do this for you, and you sign a 10-year lease, you should be depreciating those leasehold improvements over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, really, really big difference from what the tax code says. The IRS lets you depreciate, or tells you to depreciate that in commercial buildings over 39 years.
Oh.
So the point being on your books is that if you're done after 10 years, I mean, these leaseholds, typically it's things that are cemented and permanently part of the space and of no value to anyone but you, most likely you're moving on and you're not taking it with you.
Okay.
And then the last one there is vehicles. At $31,000, that's probably one vehicle. Perhaps that's the owner's vehicle. And that usually is depreciated over 5 to 7 years. And that, I will say, too, if you have a vehicle on your balance sheet, that implies that's a business asset. And so for folks that are buying, it's very common for business owners to think, great, we can go buy a car, and the company will pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, for financial statement purposes and tax purposes, that is not correct, that you should be able to get any benefit for depreciating it if it really just is for your personal use. It really is not a perk. It's not a qualified allowable perk unless you really get in your car and need to travel to customers, travel to the airport, haul product, for example, that you wouldn't normally do.
Oh, interesting. Okay, great. Okay. So so then you have where are we at?
There's a deposit there, last asset.
That's right.
Non-current asset. And in this case, that is something that you've spent money on that you're not going to get back for a while. So the most common one I see is security deposit on rent. So in this situation, if our ABC company has a 10-year lease, they put down $1,000 whenever the lease started, and it's not lost, but they're not going to get it back. They're not going to be able to enjoy the use of it until that long-term period has expired.
Okay, great. And so that's your total non-current assets.
Oh, and you know what? I think my sample balance sheet is not correct. The total non-current assets should be the $1,000 for the deposit and the $92,165. So my apologies. That should be $93,165. Thank you.
$93,165. Great.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we can fix that. Okay.
Yep.
So that, and then you get your total assets.
That's it.
Okay. Got it. So now let's go into all those other liabilities
yep.
in shareholders' equity.
So the lower part of the balance sheet is liabilities and equity. So starting with current liabilities, just like current assets, current liabilities by definition represent things you should pay, bills you should pay in the next year.
Okay.
Often even in the next month, but by definition next year. So accounts payable, that's a typical place for your core expenses that are purchased on credit, if you will. These are items that you have purchased, that you've gotten an invoice from your vendor, and then you take probably 30 days, hopefully not longer. You want to be a good customer to your vendors to pay it. So there is some type of cash flow connection to be made for people looking at their balance sheet between accounts receivable and accounts payable.
Mm-hmm.
I would not, this is a little close in my opinion. Accounts receivable in this sample is $136,000 and accounts payable is $112,000. I like to see a bigger differential because that implies the profit margin of the company. And the reason I say that is that the other side of accounts receivable is usually revenue, and the other side of accounts payable are the core expenses that you incurred to earn that revenue.
Is there a specific, so are you looking at it from a percentage standpoint or?
In eyeballing it, yes. I mean, it could also be off a bit because of timing. You pay your payables faster, slower than your clients pay your receivables. But generally speaking, the difference between when accounts receivable kind of flip to collected revenue, you'll have $136,000 of cash. And when you pay the bills sitting in accounts payable, you will have lost $112,000. So the difference, which I believe is $24,000, is your implied profit from that activity.
Okay. Which may or may not be too, it's not much of a cushion.
Right. Yeah, I like to see a bigger differential.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so then you have accrued expenses.
Yep. So those are expenses that may not be as systematic and that you don't necessarily pay on credit or get invoices for. Often it's payroll is there. Accrued rent might be there if you have a landlord that lets you be a month behind instead of a month ahead. Accrued interest sometimes if interest is a significant part of your expenses. In the situation of this company, this is a large amount of accounts of accrued expenses, and the reason is that there are some bonuses, which is often an answer. So they have decided to accrue bonuses. They feel like the year is going well, and they want those expenses captured. So I usually see accrued expenses a smaller number, certainly a smaller number than accounts payable.
Okay. And then you have a line of credit. Is it important in getting, is that the financing piece? And that
yeah.
Is, okay. Tell us
and
about
a line,
that.
So
is it important to get financing?
Well, that's a good question. Again, it depends on what your company needs. The line of credit is a nice flexible financing that you draw on when you need it and pay it down when you don't. And it's ideally used to fund working capital, which we haven't gotten into yet, but working capital is essentially your short-term financing abilities. And by definition, it's the difference between your current assets and your current liabilities. So in this case, in this example, the working capital is about $158,000. You take the current assets up there of $467,000. And you subtract the current liabilities of $309,000 and you get $158,000. So that means by quickly liquidating, a company would have $158,000 of working capital, of extra cash to work with. A line of credit is typically used to fund working capital, meaning if there's some timing, if there's a big project that goes out, a big invoice to a client, and you've used a lot of payroll or other costs to produce that invoice, you may have to sit there and use your line of credit to fund that for 30 days or so whenever your client pays you.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's sitting in this current category, it is due within the year, and often the arrangement with the bank is they can call your line of credit on demand. So one big lesson is that you want to use your line of credit, if you have one, to fund short-term activities of your business. And you would want to use long-term debt, which is down below, to fund more long-term assets or activities of your business.
Okay. So then you have your current liabilities
yep.
and then your long-term debt. and then you get your total liabilities.
Right. And in this situation, long-term debt, usually you want long-term debt to only finance long-term assets. And in this client situation, they use it to buy the car. And that kind of makes sense. So they're paying the payments of the car, and we'll assume this is a business car, over 5 to 7 years, and that's about the same amount of time we're depreciating the vehicle. So that is matching very well on the client's financial statements, and that's a good use of long-term debt. One other thing I wanted to point out back in the line of credit and also up in cash. When I look at this client's balance sheet, it strikes me that they are not managing their cash well. And the reason is they have $330,000 of cash available. It doesn't appear they need that looking at the bills they have to pay and the accounts receivables they have waiting to collect. It doesn't appear that they need that immediately to pay bills, but yet they have this line of credit, which is also charging interest.
Mm-hmm.
So and a line of credit is very flexible. You grab it the day that you need it. So that strikes me as a company that isn't managing their cash well, and perhaps they're not even paying attention to the cash balances on a regular, I would suggest, daily basis. Because
mm-hmm.
what I would do is I would pay that $100,000 down, and I would save my business the money that I otherwise would be paying in interest.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, got it. So tell us about shareholders' equity.
So shareholders' equity is the value of that business. And one thing I will say is it is the book value of that business. When business owners think about what their business is worth, mm-hmm. hopefully it is always worth more than the book value, because the reason you're in business is to create something of value that hasn't existed before. So that's often an intangible value or goodwill or some terms. So things that you have created that you can't find anywhere on the balance sheet because they're not really tangible, but there's the value of the name of your business, there's the value of your recurring client or revenue streams, there's the value of perhaps the intellectual property or the software that's been created. And that typically is what adds to the market value of the company. So it's a really big distinction for business owners to know what the difference is between their book value and their market value or fair market value, which is terms often used.
Mm-hmm.
In this situation, equity is their book value. This is the difference. If they shut down today and could sell everything off, they would walk away with $227,000.
Okay, got it.
The common elements, the first item there is common stock. What that tells me is this company is a corporation, which is either a C corporation or an S corporation, just types of businesses.
Mm-hmm.
If they were LLCs, which is very common in small businesses, or partnerships, which are very common in real estate businesses, those would have different terms. They would be called membership equity or partners equity. For accounting purposes, the same deal, just different terms. So in this situation, there's common stock, and it's valued at a cost of $1,000. And someone owns that. That's the stock that's been issued. That's not the larger number that maybe when your lawyer set up your business, that's not the authorized number. Sometimes they pick a big number, see lots of flexibility, and maybe this company had 10,000 shares of stock authorized. But in this situation, only 1,000 is issued. It could be owned by multiple people. But in this situation, because shareholders' equity is a singular word, it is owned by one person or company, one entity.
Mm-hmm. So you have your shareholders' equity, which if they shut down today, that's what they would get for the for the business. So then you have your total liabilities and shareholders' equity.
Yep. So as you see above, those equal the same as their assets.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
And couple more things just to quickly say about retained earnings. That by definition is all the cumulative through all the point in time up to today, up to the date of that balance sheet, is all the profits that have been earned and retained in the business and that are available to the shareholders to take out. So if companies are in the practice of making distributions to themselves or issuing dividends to their owners, that comes out of this number. And if they're looking at the opportunity to do that, that is really the number to look at, what is available, what equity in their business is available to take out for the use of its shareholders as a return on investment.
Now, one of the key things that So this is the balance sheet. Is there another kind of document that business owners should be looking at on a regular basis?
The three core financial statements that you should look at least on a monthly basis. The first one is the balance sheet. The second is the profit and loss statement. That's what it's called in QuickBooks. Other names are income statement, revenue and expenses. That measures at a point in time the revenue minus the expenses of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would take, and that the total of that revenue minus expenses is net income, hopefully. It's a net loss if the opposite is there, but hopefully it's net income. And if you would line up all the income statements and add up all those net incomes, those should add up to the retained earnings found on the balance sheet.
Great.
And then if the business owner took money out, you subtract that, and then that would add up to the retained earnings. But that's the idea. It's cumulative. And it's a nice buffer for business owners, too. If you've had a history of some good years, as this ABC company has, and you hit a rough patch,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps banking or financing is not available, that gives you some cushion. I mean, that should be an alert that you don't want that rough patch to continue. But that gives you some nice cushion because your business has produced that profit, and it's there ready to give your future business some cushion.
Now, what are the other things in addition to a balance sheet that we wanted to discuss today is the difference between accrual basis and cash basis and why that matters.
Okay. So that is your method of accounting, and that covers all of your financial statements. So you either produce your financial statements on an accrual basis or a cash basis. And also, in terms of a tax return, businesses have the option to report their activity on an accrual basis or a cash basis. There are some rules as a company gets bigger, whether or not for tax purposes you can do that. But for most purposes, as I see small businesses start out, they report their books on accrual basis, which I would contend is the best measurement of how your company is doing, and I can explain that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will also report their taxes on a cash basis, which is the most efficient way to do things, but it is terribly confusing and also widely misunderstood by business owners.
So tell us more about that.
So accrual basis is exactly what we just went through the last half hour on the balance sheet. That gives the story of what has happened with a company, even if it hasn't quite been collected in cash yet. For example, accounts receivable are invoices that have been sent out, but you haven't got the money yet. Accounts payable and accrued expenses, those are bills that you owe, but you haven't paid them yet. So those are accruals. Those on a cash basis, we wouldn't see any of that. On a cash basis, over in our balance sheet, we would just see the cash account, and we would see the bank debt, and we would see the fixed assets. And that's because a cash basis assumes that we only care about what has actually happened in this period, and we don't care about what is going to happen in the future. So why that is common for small businesses to have cash basis tax returns is that typically your accounts receivable are higher than your accounts payable, which is the case in our sample company, and hopefully in the caller's case, it's even a bigger disparity. So given that cash is so precious and taxes for business owners can be a large amount of a business, if you can avoid it, business owners don't want to have to pay taxes on revenue they haven't collected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially it. So in this case, looking at this balance sheet, if they pay taxes on a cash basis, they are saving roughly the $24,000, give or take, because they don't have to show the accounts receivable of $136,000 as revenue, and then they don't get to show the accounts payable of $112,000 as expenses. For tax purposes, another nice thing about cash basis is it lets companies be flexible. You can decide whether or not what period you want to pay your taxes in. We're just heading into our tax planning period. That's about all we're going to do with our clients between now and the end of the year. And we are looking at this and projecting for them. We're saying it looks like on a cash basis you are going to have income and you should look to spend some down because you're going to have a large tax hit. Or vice versa, you might have a loss this year. So let's hold back and let's save our expenses for next year when you may not have a loss. Now, so that's an efficient way to do things, but it's really, really confusing because that is a tough thing for business owners to get their heads around, and often they may need their CPA in order to navigate that, and that probably isn't very fair.
So why wouldn't that be fair?
Well, you know, you'd like to be able to understand most small business owners, taxes are a big priority and an important part of their cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
So to have tax surprises because the timing of things didn't work out the way you thought or expected can often produce an unflattering surprise.
Oh, got it. is there a rule of thumb at when you recommend a company, is there a certain revenue number that you recommend a company be accrual versus cash?
Well, there are some rules about that. If companies have inventory, so our example it doesn't, but if companies have inventory, they can only be cash basis until $1 million of annual revenue. And then if they don't have inventory, depending on what kind they are, they can be cash basis between $5 and $10 million. And that also the IRS will always let you change, especially if you're changing to the accrual method. So if it is driving someone crazy, and it just is a discomforting understanding, you can elect a method change on your tax return, and you can flip from cash to accrual basis or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And so would they do that through their CPA then?
They would, yep. That's a particular form to fill out. I don't, even at small levels, I have to admit, I rarely, rarely run into business owners that prepare their own tax returns.
Okay. So are there changes that a business owner can make to improve their connection to their company's books?
I would say the biggest one is some of the connection to the bank account and the cash that we talked about before. If they don't have online access, they should get it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do have online access and rarely use it, I would bake that into their regular system first thing in the morning, first thing before they shut down and go home at night, is to check the activity and to really understand what changes went through the bank account that day.
Mm-hmm. What other major issues do you see business owners that are pretty common to what you ordinarily see that are easy fixes for them?
One I see is that there is a commingling, not necessarily deceptive, but a commingling of personal and business expenses. And so often there's small business owners, the cash in their bank account may be one of their largest cash balances. It may be what supports them and their family. And so if there's a credit card bill or if there's a tuition bill paid, well, that's where my money is. I will pay it out of there. Dangerous for a couple of reasons. If it is not appropriately recorded as a distribution to the business owner or maybe even added to their payroll, it can distort the finances of the company. So what if you're a business owner is deciding to pay their child's college bill and an accountant or they record that as some type of business expense on their financial statements, one that is not correct. It's not a necessary business expense. And when it comes time to do a tax return, you either will have to know that and remove that as a deduction, which means you'll probably be paying more taxes than you thought, or worse, it gets through and you're audited and that is found out and tossed out and interest and penalties are accrued on that. So personal and business expenses really have to be separate. I understand that the cash produced by businesses often supports them and their families. The right thing to do is to take that cash out at the appropriate time, either through payroll or through dividends and distributions, and to put that into your own personal checking account and pay your own personal bills. Do not commingle.
Got it. That's valuable advice. And when you say commingle, so that I just want to be clear here because I often see that they use a credit card.
Yes, another excellent example. There will be one credit card or several credit cards that are used for multiple purposes. You know, and if they're in your purse or wallet, you know, on any given day, you have personal charges and business charges, and that's very easy to commingle too. It can be caught at the monthly statement side. You know, you could go through. I know many accountants that work for my clients who are business owners that spend a fair amount of their monthly close time going through and trying to figure out what their boss's personal expenses were. And I would just say, gosh, that's not a good use of your payroll because it's really, really nothing they should be spending their time on. But you're right, you know, folks like getting points for mileage and all those things I understand, but it's just like your bank account, that is commingling. And it really is not a good practice.
Well, wouldn't it be more advantageous to put it on a company credit card anyway to be able to establish a line of credit, and wouldn't that affect borrowing in the future?
Yes, absolutely. When banks run the credit reports, they'll look at all the credit vehicles out there underneath the company's name, and they'll be able to quickly tell how currently those are paid. If you're going to have a business credit card, please pay that bill on time, because that affects a lot of things, just like in your personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So at what point in generating revenue, at what point should a business owner seek out a CPA? I mean, other than, taxes every year, what revenue point would you recommend that they seek out a CPA?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say after the first 100,000, if I had to pick a threshold. It certainly is a cost to your business. If you as a business owner have finance experience, that's great. You're probably, frankly, more informed than many of the business owner clients I have, and that's just simply because few people get in the business of whatever their new business is because they like accounting or taxes or doing bank reconciliations. You know, that doesn't make sense. They get in the business because they're passionate about what that particular business does. So it's very common for business owners not to, for finance and accounting, not to be their core strength or even interest.
Mm-hmm.
But, at I would say a bookkeeping service, a part-time bookkeeper, someone that has experience or has been to school or has had some training, accounting's a science. It really is, and your brain often kind of gets it or not. So those of us that like it kind of understand how that works. We understand when things are in balance. We understand what should equal each other, and we understand how to make heads or tails of the story that it tells. So I would suggest probably after the first 100,000 that you get some type of professional help in some capacity.
At what point should a business owner entertain hiring a CFO?
Yeah, I thought about that. That's a cost. It certainly is. What I would suggest is probably maybe after the first $1 million to $2 million, a company can often be in a position to afford a controller, I would say, which is kind of your first level of management responsibility for the accounting function. And that controller will take care of the financial statements, would run payroll, would deal with employee benefits. Most likely you have a workforce at that time. Maybe you have 10 to 20 people, so they would take care of that. There would be some separation of duties in the accounting function, so one person at that revenue level isn't writing the checks and isn't entering into the books and isn't controlling the whole system, so that's a good, healthy way to separate some things. But largely a controller is not as strategic of a position that they aren't. They're usually spending their time reporting on the activities and managing the workforce there as opposed to thinking strategically. So a good CFO is someone that makes sure the finances are in order, but to be honest, as long as good systems are set up so that the historical data is properly reported, a good CFO helps a business owner look out strategically.
Mm.
Look at new revenue lines, look at the profits and the cost situation if you have more than one product or revenue line in your business, helps you shop and evaluate whether it's time for a business to move, whether it's time for a business to expand, to operate in a different state, in a different country. They have time to step back and have a good strategic mind. And I usually see somewhere between the $2 to $5 million when a company is ready for a good CFO.
Mm-hmm. And when they're seeking advice of a CPA, is it necessary that their CPA firm be in the state in which they operate?
I would say it is helpful, but not necessary. The CPA in the state they operate will be an expert on that state's taxes. Now, not all states have income taxes. Florida, for example, does not have an income tax. Washington has a different type of tax. It's called a B&O tax. Texas has a franchise tax. Ohio has a CAT tax. So some of the tax structures are more important than others in that state. I would say larger, not to put a plug in for our firm, but I would say larger regional firms, we all have clients that operate globally and in different states, so we are large enough in order to have specialists. We call it SALT, state and local tax, specialists that can monitor those states. So if we have a client that we file 10 or 20 states, then we can make sure those are done properly. But in general, for a small business, I would say if they are filing state returns, it would be helpful to have a CPA in that state. Those of us that live and work in Michigan after the corporate tax changes a couple years ago are kind of lucky, because only C corporations, which I don't see many small businesses at anymore, only C corporations have to pay a business level Michigan tax. It's called the MBT. So that is kind of nice. So that means all of the sole proprietors on the call, all the LLCs, all the partnerships, and even all the S-Corps do not have a state of Michigan filing requirement, and that's kind of a nice, cool deal.
I guess if you can call that a cool deal.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
What are, what are some advice that you would give a small business owner related to their financials, related to the fiscal health of their business? Like, is there like specific advice that you give to business owners because you've seen, you know, the same mistakes made over and over? So what are some of those mistakes that you've seen, and what's the advice that you would give?
Okay. Well, one of the big ones, which hopefully we helped out today, is knowing what a balance sheet is and understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we didn't go over is, or what are some obvious things to look at and maybe know something might be afoul? I would say negative numbers anywhere on your balance sheet.
Great.
You know, negative cash, that would be a big problem. May or may not mean that your cash is negative, but that's a big problem. Negative accounts receivable. For people that use QuickBooks, it's an easy software to use, but it's an awfully easy one to kind of misuse. So we often see, because things are not posted correctly, negative accounts receivable or negative accounts payable. So that once in a while, those could be true, but more often than not, there's something wrong.
So there's usually coding issues.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So make sure it's coded correctly. What else?
So help me again with your question.
So what are the major mistakes that you see, and what is some advice that you would give?
Okay, so the balance sheet, the not having a history of profitability, and if you don't not understanding why, I do see small businesses that overspend too early on. They will spend, they'll get the latest gadgets, they'll travel, spend a lot on business travel. They will have luxurious offices. I often see overspending on offices. They get far ahead of themselves. So I think you have to, unless an opulent office is absolutely critical to the face of your business, I would say you start lean and mean. And I would suggest that the expenses of your office, which are your rent and your utilities and your phone, are only about 5 to 10% of your revenue. If it's more than that, I would say you're overspending. You either have too much space, or space is too expensive, or the people filling that space are not producing enough revenue for you.
You know, speaking of overhead and that rent, I mean, it could be work for you in that you have a place to meet your customers.
Sure.
And whatnot. But you know, there's a lot of businesses out there that people are choosing to work out of their homes.
They are.
Do you have any advice for that? I mean, I'm sure you've seen the pros and cons of it.
Yes, and we provide that for our staff too, the ability to work remotely. I think you really have to understand how important face-to-face interactions with colleagues or with customers is important to the business. If you have, let's say, software developers that really are working on their own, they might even prefer an environment where they can work at home. Now, if you have an advertising agency where teams are collaborating together, strikes me that those people should be in the same space, being able to take advantage of the creativity of each other. So I think it really depends what your business is. We haven't talked much about manufacturing businesses, but the same thing. What does that business need? What of their equipment is on and used regularly? Is there enough space to run those operations? If there's old and moldy equipment there, do we really need to be paying rent to keep it there?
Right. Yeah, you don't want old and moldy equipment
No.
in your house.
Yes. All of that, house or business, yes.
Right. And yet it could be a nice expense and help you out on your taxes at the end, because certainly if you have these expenses, that can also
true,
help.
True, true. Yep, but it still is real money. I know, especially as we're getting into tax planning, it's very often I get called nearly daily, can I go buy this? Can I go buy that? And my answer is, if your business needs it either today or really soon, absolutely. But remember, a tax deduction is less than what the actual cost is. It's best to keep your money if your business really doesn't need whatever that shiny object is you might want to purchase.
Yeah, let's talk real quick about supplies. I'm sure you see how people over time can really cut their supplies.
Sure. I mean, that's often it's not a big expense. I would be concerned, I would say, if it is. Where I see that as a bigger expense are on medical practices. You know, dental physicians, and that is a popular spending item they will do at the end of the year when they're trying to spend down their income. Mm-hmm. The caution there would be, can you use it? You know, what's the turnover? What's the shelf life of that? And make sure you're not, again, overspending and you're going to use real money to toss something away someday in the future.
So, Chris, how can people get in touch with you? Would you give your contact information?
Oh, sure.
Tell us a little bit about your firm. You kind of did a little bit there, but please do tell more about that for people that are interested in working with you.
Sure. I'm too nice. So Raymond is a CPA firm that also has a wealth management and a corporate investigative service division. We are the 30th largest firm in the United States. We have 22 offices in 4 different states. 12 of those offices are here in Michigan. I operate in the Ann Arbor office. Mm-hmm. Our other offices are located in Ohio, Indiana, and Florida. I would call the Michigan market our bread and butter, with 12 offices that go all the way up from southeast Michigan up to the tip, to Sheboygan, down to Traverse City, and all the way around. We have the state well covered. We pride ourselves on providing local and close service to our clients. That is why we have so many offices. We want to make sure that our clients have direct access to our professionals. We specialize in smaller businesses. I would probably define those as between 1 and 100 million. We have a lot of services we can offer. We have a lot of value we can provide. I would say our best fits are clients that are willing and eager to talk with us more than once a year. Mm-hmm. If we're given the time and openness to be real partners with our clients, I think that's where most of our value is. I tell most people that I think like an accountant, but I don't act like one. And as you that knows me, you might be able to vouch for that.
I do. Well, all my clients know all about natural hardwiring, and I would have never...
Yes.
I would have never guessed your hardwiring as a CPA.
That's my secret sauce, yes. And I would say all this accounting and tax stuff we've talked about, I won't say I love it, but I understand it well. And what I love is that the fact that I am doing this for my clients on a monthly or annual basis means when they call me with a question, my head is so drilled down to what their business does and what makes it tick and how it operates that I'm really at a good place to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So we are trusted business advisors. That's what I aspire to be. So my best use is we are doing quality, competent work for them on the accounting and tax side, but we're also there. We work with, when they call me with a question, I've probably had that question for many businesses of many different sizes and many different industries before, and they're able to take advantage of that knowledge to help them navigate through it.
Yeah, you certainly have a lot of strategic knowledge that is very valuable, and you know, I've seen that from you, and what I appreciate most about you. How do people get in touch with you?
Sure. My email is Chris, chris.singh, S-I-N-G, at Raymond, R-E-H-M-A-N-N.com. And my direct line is 734-302-4130. I love phone calls, and it would be my pleasure to talk with anyone on this call or recording.
Wonderful. Chris, thank you so much. You've given us, it was funny when we were talking, you said, how could I spend an hour on balance sheet?
That's true.
You just did.
We did. And we did.
And it was actually very interesting. And
coming from a business owner yourself, that's nice to hear, Lisa.
Yes. It was fascinating. And hopefully to impress upon everyone the importance of really getting a handle and a systematic way, a regular, consistent way of looking at your balance sheets to really get a handle on the financial health of your business. So you've been extremely instrumental in doing that today, Chris.
Wonderful.
And I thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for coming to the Business Accelerator call. Until next time, create a great life. Bye, everybody.